doing that, I was face to face with it. It was holding me by my throat, and it felt like it was sucking something out of me.
I probably should have been more scared than I was when I witnessed the exorcism.
I turned and looked on my right side. When I did, there's a beam on the side of the tree, a large beam. It's looking at me, and I'm looking at it.
After I hit the lock button and looked back up, I saw red eyes staring back at me.
That they're going to show multiple gods all over the earth, be able to speak in people's languages, and at that point, it kind of converge into this one entity, which will be revealed as extraterrestrial. You'll realize that aliens are the gods of old, and at that point, it'll wipe religion out of the context of humanity.
No way, it couldn't have been a person, I know that. I know that people can't run through the woods like that.
So this thing comes into view, and I see it. It's 50 yards away from me. It's walking on two legs. It's huge. This is a big, hairy looking being.
Welcome. I'm your host, and this is Uncomfortable. Tonight's guest is an adventurer, photojournalist, children's book author, and multiple award-winning filmmaker. Born and raised in beautiful British Columbia, Canada, our guest has spent many years exploring the natural beauty of North America. He has traveled the world seeking adventure and documenting it with his camera. His jump into the world of Bigfoot. His jump into the world of Bigfoot came after COVID-19 prohibited traveling. So with a flashlight, a video camera, and a quest for adventure, our guest started investigating eyewitness accounts of the infamous cryptid. He's traveled deep into the Canadian and American wilderness in search of evidence and has produced three chapters in his latest series entitled Searching for Sasquatch, that can be viewed on any number of streaming platforms. Our guest is currently working on his fourth installment, set for release early in 2022. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show, filmmaker and author, Mr. Jason Kenzie. Jason, welcome to Uncomfortable.
Well, hey, it's very nice to meet you, and thank you for having me here.
Well, thanks for being with us. Jason, we first met back in, what was it, July of this 2021 in Ann Arbor, Michigan, of all places. We were both there in support of our endeavors, me with a vendor's booth for the Uncomfortable podcast, and you as a speaker at the Michigan Bigfoot Conference.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. They flew me out there, and they had me speak about my Sasquatch encounters, which is interesting because I'm kind of a skeptic when it comes to Sasquatch, but I'm open-minded, and yeah, it was so much fun, you know, meeting new friends and getting up and seeing all the people watching me talk. It was one of my first times that I was able to get up and talk to people, and yeah, it was a good conference.
It's funny because just last night I received a message from another person who was actually at that event participating, a lovely lady by the name of Jen Cruz, one of the She-Squatchers. And she messaged me and said, "Oh my God, you're in Jason's new documentary." And I was like, what?
And she said, she sent me a link to it. And she said, there's a couple of shots of you in here, and it's great. And I was like, oh my God, I remember you walking up to the table, and I remember you and I and my son having a conversation. I did not recall that you were filming at any point. So I immediately downloaded the app for Vimeo and purchased the documentary, and lo and behold, there I am in my 3.5 seconds of video fame as you're walking through the conference there. And it was a very nice surprise.
You're a superstar.
Yeah, I literally filmed that portion on my phone, and I sent it to my son, and my son was like, holy shit, we're famous. So
yeah, it was great. I should have put more of you in there, but I was just walking around trying to get filler shots to put in the documentary, you know, like cutaways, you know, keep the film moving.
Right.
And no, yeah, I should have.
It was a great little surprise. I had no idea. And, you know, just from going and sitting around on a Saturday afternoon, being a guy with a small podcast and a nice little following, to holy shit, I'm in a documentary.
Well, did you happen to interview a lot of people at the conference? Normal people, like people, just customers?
You know, we had several people come by the table. It was a very busy day. I have to say, I had a lot of traffic at my table, and that was a wonderful first dip into that environment, because my podcast only started last February. And this has been an interest of mine for my entire life, but it hasn't been until this past February, and we're coming up on a year here next month, that I actually got into the podcast realm of things. And so I was floored, because there were a couple of couples that came to the table and had basically indicated to me that they were there because they knew that I was going to be there in support of the show, and they came to talk to me. Obviously, they were probably just being nice, because I'm sure they came to talk and see the speakers as well. But it was a very humbling experience. And yeah, throughout the day, I got to talk to a lot of people. And the unfortunate aspect of this phenomenon is, and you run into this the more and more that you're into it, is, you know, people have stories, and they'll have, you know, accounts that they want to get off their chest. But when you talk about putting it in terms of something as permanent as recording, a lot of times that's a kind of a push away for them. You know, I can tell them that I can alter their voice, and I can tell them that, you know, I can guarantee you that I'm not going to use your name or where you're from. And sometimes that's enough, but many times that's a pretty big hump to get over. And so I ran into that quite a bit at the conference. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, it was, since filming my documentaries, you would be amazed how many eyewitnesses don't want to be on film. You know, in chapter 2, mm-hmm. They had a police officer, an ex-law enforcement officer, and she did not want to go on film. Like, yeah. She did not want to be seen, and I had begged her. I said, look, I can black you out, I can change your voice, and she still didn't want to do it. So then I said, well, how about if I just show you what I can do? And I did a little bit of, I filmed her a little bit, and I blacked it out and changed her voice. And when she saw what I had done with the small bit, she's like, okay, I will trust you. And I went as far as basically not just blacking her out. I literally took like black circles and went and put them over top of her face, because she was afraid that people would lighten the video.
Oh, yeah.
And be able to still see her. Because just because you have a light behind them, and you have them blacked out.
Sure, you can mess with the exposure. Yeah.
Exactly. And even though I got her to wear a mask and everything, she was so paranoid because she was afraid that she would get ridiculed and made fun of. And, you know, so yeah. And still to this day, there's people that will come to me and tell me their story. And then as soon as they say, well, can I interview you on film? They're going, no, nope, don't want that. And I'll try and say, please, I could do a whole chapter, like chapter five, and everybody would be blacked out. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it would just look funny, right? But, you know, that's just what happens in the Sasquatch world. That's what I'm finding.
You know, the thing I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
The thing I found that was interesting, and I guess what really brought it to light to me was my son, who was there helping me for the day. He's not part of the actual podcast. He doesn't do the producing or anything for me. He was just there in support of, you know, in case I had to leave the table, there would be somebody else there to talk to people or sell the shirts or whatever. And, good, bad, or otherwise, you know, that boy had grown up with me all of his life. And as I indicated before, this has been a subject that I've been deeply immersed in for, you know, probably since I was 7 or 8 years old. That, among other things, UFOs and hauntings and all the weird stuff. But the thing I noticed was that after about midday, my son had a smile on his face, which is not unusual. I mean, he's a happy kid, but, you know, as a 24-year-old, 23-year-old, I think at the time, sitting there, and he just kind of had a smile on his face. And we ended up talking about it later, and he's like, you were in a position, you were in a group of people who were all there for the same reason. You know, I don't think somebody who has got an ulterior motive as far as trying to disprove these things or, you know, make fun of people is going to spend, you know, X number of dollars to go to a conference and just to walk around to troll people. So the majority of the people that we had contact with, everybody was there for the same reason. That was, you know, a love or a joy for this topic and an interest in learning more and hearing, you know, good speakers talk about the different aspects of these beings and what evidence is available. And he just kind of had a smile on his face because he was like in a room full of a lot of people who nobody was judging your interest in this topic. And that, I think, was, you know, the big takeaway for that day was it was really enjoyable to be around a group of people who had varying degrees of belief in this subject. And we're all there for the same reason. It was to rub elbows and talk and exchange stories and see, you know, intelligent presentations on the topic. And it was just it was a wonderful afternoon. Can't say that I've had that much fun in a long time.
Yeah, I find a lot of people are fairly nice when it comes to Sasquatch. You know, everyone's searching for evidence. Everybody has their own beliefs,
which is very contradictory of the Bigfoot community in large, because there's so much divisiveness between the apers and the ones that feel that they're more of a people, and, you know, the woo crowd versus the non-woo crowd. And you know, when you really start getting into all these different factions of who believes what, it can be very divisive. But at this conference, that didn't really show itself at all. It was like I said, just a bunch of people there enjoying the time and talking about a subject that was obviously near and dear to a good number of people.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And I think next time I go to a conference, I'll set up a table and I'll have my video camera, and I'll just ask people, if they had an experience, if they want to go on camera and talk about it. And that's a way for me to be able to put them into the documentaries.
Yeah, that'd be a great idea. And that was, honestly, that was the hope that I was going to walk out with, you know, more than a handful of, you know, 25, 30 minute long interviews. I think part of that falls on me. I think I got caught up in the whole just discussion. I mean, we had probably a 40 minute discussion before we even started recording. So obviously I love to talk and I like to, find out about other people's experiences and, you know, what got them to the point where they were interested. And, you know, I think, sometimes I have a tendency to, over talk some people and, but you know, I have a table coming up for the end of April, 1st of May in Ohio at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference, which is, I believe, the largest conference, on the east side of the Mississippi. And, this is, you know, it's a renowned conference and, is huge every year. So my hopes are that, I'll be able to maybe control myself a little bit and focus more on, getting people's stories and, you know, hopefully walk out of there with a combination of, multiple stories to air across, numerous episodes.
Yeah. Bigfoot conference would be fun to speak at.
Yeah, definitely. They've got a number of very big speakers. I know Dr. Meldrum's going to be there. Cliff Berrickman from Finding Bigfoot, he's going to be there. I believe one of the other cast members, Renee, I think she's going to be there. It seems like every couple of weeks they're announcing another speaker on top of it. So highly encourage anybody listening to look into it. Tickets are available, and that's definitely going to be a good time. So, Jason, let's focus on one right off the bat. Let's let everybody know where they can find anything that you've produced as far as this topic goes, so they can easily find you on YouTube or Facebook or wherever it is you want.
Oh yeah. So if they Google Jason Kenzie, KENZIE, Animal Adventures or Searching for Sasquatch, they will be able to find all my work. They'll be able to find my children's books. They can also go on YouTube, and they can also search out Jason Kenzie's Animal Adventures or Searching for Sasquatch. There's a few streaming platforms that play it, like Plex and Tubi TV. That's a big one.
And your latest one is on Vimeo right now.
Yeah, it's on Vimeo right now. So people can either purchase it or they can just rent it. And I made the price very cheap and expensive. You know, I think it's under $3 to rent.
I purchased it yesterday. The rental option was $1.99 and the purchase option was $2.99.
Yeah. So I made it under $3 because, you know, everyone who doesn't have $3, and you know, the film is called Searching. So you come along for the adventure and going into the forest and you meet some interesting characters, and it's part one that's on right now. And part two comes out next weekend. And that one has a lot of crazy stuff that happened. I interviewed a lady who grew up in the back areas of Harrison 50 years ago. And she lived in a little cabin. There was no one else around. There was a road that she used to drive to get home, and it was a dirt road. And there was no other houses within miles from where she lived. And every night, almost around midnight, she would hear what sounds like a crying baby in the forest.
Yeah.
And I went and interviewed her, and then she took me to the area where she saw, she was coming home from work. She had her kids with her. She had like 3 or 4 kids. And this big, hairy creature came running across the road. It actually walked. It walked across the road and into the forest, and it looked right at her. And her son yelled, "Oh, I think that's Bigfoot." And it was like, I think it was like 11 o'clock at night, so it was dark, but the headlights caught it. And she took me to the area where she would hear the crying baby. So I met up with a buddy of mine. I left her, met up with a buddy of mine. We went into the area at night with a big giant speaker. And I downloaded an audio of a crying baby. And we blasted it over through the forest. And I'm sitting there going, I think this is kind of a waste of time. So I turned the crying baby sound off. And the next thing that happened, holy cow, I was blown away. I could not believe. Like, yeah, what happened next? And you'll have to watch the film to find out, but it was pretty bone chilling.
Wow, what a great teaser.
Yeah.
You said that comes out next Sunday?
Next weekend. Yeah, next weekend. Saturday. At 9 a.m. is when it actually gets, it goes on. And yeah, there was a lot of stuff that went on in chapter two. Yeah, chapter three was quite fun to watch. There was a lot of screams in the forest. There was something that walked up to me and grunted in my face. And that was terrifying. And that was terrifying, yeah. And a funny thing, because I'm lying in a hammock. And it's probably about 1 a.m.
Is this where you were hanging underneath the big X structure?
Yes, the big tree X. Mm. There was a big giant X, and one of the trees looked like it was pushed over, and the other one looked like it was maybe carried and placed. And these trees were massive. They were like 25 feet high and probably about 2 feet, maybe 3 feet in diameter. Like, there's no way, not even a few strong men could carry that up and over.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be almost impossible, but so I decided to, you know, sleep underneath it with the hammock. And while I'm lying there in the hammock and I'm kind of falling in and out of sleep, and I could hear other cracking in the forest, and I could hear like maybe a bunny or a mouse, little animals scampering, because you can hear kind of the difference. And while I'm lying there, everything's quiet. And I could hear screams in the forest, but way off in the distance. Like, they have to be maybe 2 or 3 kilometers away, or 2 or 3 miles away. Like, they were pretty far, but you could hear them just kind of talking. Like screams, like, what, there'd be a scream over here and a scream over there. And it was just very, and if you just closed your eyes and listened, you could hear. And it was constantly just, like, really slightly, just off in the distance. It was amazing. And that's when I heard the big tree snap, and then could hear something walking. And it got closer. And all of a sudden, whatever it was, it grunted, because I didn't see it. But it was like, oof, oof. That's what it sounded like. And then I started shaking, uncontrollable. I couldn't believe it. I was like, all I was going through my mind is, oh, if this is a wild boar or maybe a bear.
Yeah.
Or, you know, then I'm thinking, oh my God, if this is truly a Sasquatch and I'm sleeping under the X that I had all these Bigfoot researchers tell me that this is a sign that they don't want people to cross, and that I was stupid to be sleeping underneath it because it was a sign of disrespect. And I'm like, here I am thinking, well, they're not real, so I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to do it.
I mean, I think, you know, we're still struggling to try to understand what those tree structures actually mean. Mm-hmm. I mean, overtly from the initial seeing a very large X in the middle of the woods, one would assume that that means stop. you know, don't pass. But, you know, that's an assumption that we're making. We don't know exactly.
No, what no one knows really anything. We can just assume, right? We can just think what they could mean. But I found quite a few. Like, yeah, they were all over the place. And I found one by mistake by just running through the forest, testing out the stabilization. Like, I was using the brand new GoPro, mm-hmm, and I wanted to test out the stabilization. So I just booked it through the forest. No path, just jumping and running and going through the forest. And in fact, I got a little bit lost because I wasn't paying attention to where I was going. I was just running. I just wanted to see how good. And I'm jumping logs, and all of a sudden I stopped to take a breath, and I turn around, and there's another giant axe. And right across from it was, it looked like an actual, all these branches and pieces of trees and stuff were all weaved together to make, when I went inside of it, it was like a cage. That's what it felt like. I mean, I could see through everything, but it just felt like I was in a cage. And it definitely, I mean, obviously a human could have made it. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't, I mean, the tree X that was across from it, that could take 3 or 4 people to do, because they were pretty big, but they weren't big enough that, you know, three strong people could lift them up and place them there. But why? I was in the middle of nowhere. And I had to, you know, find my way back out of the forest. I mean, it wasn't that hard, but, you know, everyone, this at the end of a hunt, like, it was getting on closer to almost the evening.
You know, so during this time that you were hanging in that, the hammock underneath the axe, I was struck by a couple of things. One, there's a very obvious whoop that you caught on audio. And then there's two vocalizations, I'm going to even say verbalizations.
Talking, the weird talking.
Yeah. And as soon as I heard that, man, it threw me back to one of the first times that I ever heard Ron Moorhead Sierra sounds. It was very, very, very similar to the odd chatter that he had recorded, which, you know, sounds like a conversation that's going between multiple creatures. And, you know, it's just, you got like maybe one or two words and then one or two words or whatever you want to call what it is they say.
Whatever it is, I was blown away when I heard that. I was sitting and the lights were off, and I'm just going through the footage. I had my eyes closed, because as you can see in the actual video, you just see an area with just a little stump where we had put some food or some, we put some food on that little stump, and the little infrared camera was facing it. And the infrared on the camera wasn't that strong. So you see the stump. And so I had my eyes closed listening, because I didn't have to watch it. And I'm listening. And then I hear the whoop. I'm like, oh, wow. And then when that talking or that weird mumbling, I almost fell off the chair. I'm like, what the? And everybody is sleeping. Like, there's no one, like, we're all sleeping. You know, this is why there was no, you couldn't hear other people talking, because there was no one. It was in the middle of the night. And here I am, you know, on like 400 feet away, trying to sleep in a
Is that how far the rest hammock. Of the, is that how far the rest of the investigative crew was?
Yeah.
About 400 feet away from you?
Yeah. Probably about 400 feet away.
That's a little more,
give or take.
That's a little more distance than I would be willing to put myself away from a potential source of help.
Yeah, they were pretty far. Yeah, but think about it. There's not much anyone could do if whatever walked up to me decided to grab me.
Yeah, good point.
and dragged. And that was going through my mind. I'm thinking, my God, if this is really a Sasquatch that people are talking about, and I just pissed it off. I felt like I just visioned an arm coming up and just hitting me and then just grabbing me like a taco.
During that time,
taking me off.
Were you at all stricken with like sensory overload of fear?
Yeah.
That so many people report.
Yeah, I started shaking uncontrollably in the tent, like in the hammock tent. I was trying to control myself. If I'm shaking, I couldn't. You know, I mean, I would literally would be lying if I said to people, I wasn't scared. No, I was terrified. I mean, like I said, it could have been a boar. It could have been a bear. I just could not control myself. And then finally, yeah, you know, I yelled out, you know, and you'll have to wait till chapter 2 to find out what happens.
So the next chapter is going to pick up right where that left off.
Yeah, it picks up right after that. It picks up with the eye shine that happened in the forest that Blake caught on his camera. It starts off with that because I want people to understand when they see the film that there are unexplained things happening around us. So it starts off with that incredible eye shine where it darts behind the tree and then comes back out. And then it goes right back to me in the hammock tent. And that just sets the tone to, okay, there is something or some things in the forest around us. We're not just, you know, what is it? You know, we didn't, yeah, it was just fun. It really opens your mind about what's out there in the forest.
So you indicated that, you know, you've pretty much only been embroiled in this topic for about 2 years now.
It's going on 2.5 years.
So can I ask what was the, I know you know, it was kind of, born out of the pandemic and being very limited as far as what you were able to do and travel was restricted and all that. But what was your stand on Sasquatch prior to you deciding to get into, potentially searching for it? Was it something that you had an interest in, throughout your life or is this just something that, you know, just kind of manifested?
Well, I've always been a skeptic of Sasquatch. So I've always had a fascination with Sasquatch. And being an animal and wildlife photographer, photojournalist, I'd always go into the forest and I would always meet people with, you know, they're cool exotic animals. And every once in a while, people would always say, wow, hey, have you ever come across, like, have you ever seen anything strange in the forest? Like, maybe Bigfoot? And I would kind of laugh it off, right? I'd be like, no, I've heard strange screams in the forest. I've seen the trees ripped out of the ground, turned upside down, and jammed back into the ground.
Yeah.
I've seen, like, dead animals hanging from trees.
Have you really?
Yeah, I've seen that, but I just thought maybe it was a cougar or something that would drag them up there.
Sure.
Because I did find it strange that there was like vines or that were attached to these animal corpses. but back then, I just didn't think anything of it. I was just like, you know, I would find them. I would see them. I didn't think much of it.
You're saying vines that were attached?
It was wrapped around the animals that were hanging from the trees.
Really?
Yeah.
Now that's,
like I've seen, but this is going back many, many years. And like I said, I brushed it off. I just thought, I mean, I looked at that, it was odd, but I didn't think anything of it, right? And I just carry on. searching for whatever animal that I'm looking for to photograph.
That's a really interesting point that you bring up there with the vine, because I mean, you know, in reports, it's not at all uncommon to come across reports of people finding animals up in the trees. And you know, my second episode was a two-part, so episodes 2 and 3 was about a gentleman here in very close to me in Southwest Michigan, who his daughter and he had found a deer carcass way up 25 feet up in a tree that had been handily dismantled. And you know, we don't have cougars down here. We don't have many animals down here that would have the power to carry a 180 to 200 pound deer up into a 25 feet up into a tree. And
I think you would be very surprised. You would be surprised how strong a cougar is. Like, I know cougars are usually 160 pounds. 170 pounds is a pretty big cougar.
Yeah.
But you would be surprised how strong that they can be. I mean, yes, they couldn't carry a 300 pound, but pieces of it they could carry up there. But
what I guess the point I'm making is, down here in Southwest Michigan, in dab in the armpit of the Midwest, cougars are not typically something that we have in this area, at least according to our DNR. Department of Natural Resources does not recognize that there's any quantifiable number of cougars in this area. So it's an unusual thing for them to find in the area that we're speaking about.
Mm-hmm.
But in a lot of reports, you do hear about hunters finding prey up in the tree.
Yeah.
The fact that you saw one, witnessed one that had been wrapped up in a vine, that is really unusual. And
yeah, it basically was. Think of some of the what do you call it? Roots, you know, roots and stuff. You know, you pull out of the ground that can be used to tie up stuff like that. And what's interesting is how I would see these things sometimes, or how I would see some of these animals in the trees, is I'm always looking for owls, right? Because I love photographing owls and porcupines, because porcupines, they look like bird nests when they're just out there. So then you see something that is out of place, and then I get closer. And that's how I would see, but I've only seen it like twice, and only one time was it one was kind of tied. It looked like it was had like vines around it.
Wow.
Now I kind of wish I could have climbed up and got a closer look.
That's really
interesting. But it's interesting. But yeah, so that's how I got into doing Sasquatch, because I thought, you know, I'm not allowed to travel, so, you know, I keep hearing this thing about these Sasquatches, you know, I don't think they're real, but I'm going to go, and one of my friends said, well, I know someone that saw one, so why don't you go interview them? So I went and interviewed them, and I found it fascinating, and they took me to the area, or they drew a map of where to go, and I went to that area, and I loved going into the forest searching. Now, I believe that if these creatures do exist, these Sasquatches, that I don't think I'm going to go walking up on them. I'm pretty sure that they will come to me. So anytime I go out into the forest filming, and I'm walking around, and I'm searching for Sasquatch, I'm not actually expecting to come walking up on one. But, you know, being able to make lots of noise and the hoots and hollers and, you know, these, you know, like any animal, sometimes they get curious, so they'll come in.
Right. There's a lot of different theories on, You know, you have one segment of researchers that go out and they do the wood knocks and they do the hoops and the howls and, you know, make all kinds of god-awful racket. And then you have a segment of the research population that believes that you just go out there and basically just be there. And that if they're in the area, they'll know you're there. And if you just go about your business and not try to rile them up or try to incite any kind of interaction, that you're more likely to get some kind of interaction that way, because they'll come in much closer and just try to view you and see what you're doing there. There's so many different theories on and different investigative ways that, you know, and I think that's smart. I think you need to have a diversity in the way that you approach seeking these things out. But I at the end of the day, you know, this many years into people doing research and this being such a hot topic from, you know, 1958 for the most part on, as far as people being interested in researching, we've still not come up with the surefire way to lure these things in or to get close to them. Some people say that they've been able to, other people not so much. So, you know, it's a tremendous mystery. You know, and I think with anything that's weird or bizarre or out of the normal, I think once you start having people who come out and talk about this stuff, there's going to be a number of people who want to jump on that bandwagon for whatever reason, whether it's they want their 15 minutes of fame or they want to feel like they're a part of this weird thing going on. And, you know, you're going to have people that make stuff up and they're not completely transparent with their reports. But by and large, when you have as many reports of these things and in so many places across the world, not just North America, but, you know, very similar beings being reported throughout the world, you just can't look past it. You know, to me, from the first time that I saw the Patterson-Gimlin film from 1967, I believe, you know, I'd seen still photographs of it in books.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I think the episode aired in 1977, which would have made me 12, Leonard Nimoy's In Search Of. That's the first time I actually saw the film of Patty walking across the sandbar.
Yeah.
And at 12 years old, there was nothing about that did not look right to me. It looked very organic. It didn't look fake. I've never looked at that film since I was 12 years old and thought, oh shit, yeah, for the last 10 years I thought it was real, but no, that's definitely a guy's costume. I've never once. It's always been extremely organic. Her gait, the way she walks, the way she turns, everything looks very normal, very natural. Like that's how it would move. So, you know, for me, it's never been a, I do have some skepticism when it comes to reports that I hear. I do have some skepticism behind some of the people that, that are interviewed, but I've never had any skepticism as far as what that film showed me. In my gut, I've always felt that that was a real creature, you know, and that's what I've been, you know, living with for, you know, the rest of my life. That's, you know, have I ever seen one? No, I have not. I do have a couple of experiences that I think I was in the in close proximity to these things.
Mm-hmm.
And that was during a time when I was hunting. I'd never had anything really aggressive happen to me. It was always just, and at the time that it happened, I was not drawing a correlation to them to it being Bigfoot.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, some odd stuff, weird stuff. Boy, deer don't normally act like that. You know, hearing something following you in the woods. At one point I thought I was being followed back to my hunting stand by a large deer. It didn't sound right. You know, at first when it happened, I thought the landowner, because I'd actually walked onto another piece of property, I didn't have permission to hunt. I thought the landowner had come out and caught me. I wasn't hunting the property. I was just very interested in the layout of that land, and I was trying to get an idea of where the deer were bedding down and, you know, to position myself on the other property to take advantage of it. And I stopped multiple times after hearing footsteps behind me, just waiting for what I thought to be the landowner to, like, just ream my ass for being on his property without permission. Yeah. And never did. And then as I kept walking, it would start walking again. And when I would stop, it would stop, you know, your typical pacing in the woods. And, and then all of a sudden I got super excited that I was like, oh shit, I got a deer following me back to my deer stand. You know, I got this 12 point buck behind me, you know? And so I didn't want to turn around. I didn't want to spook it. If it's following me, maybe it'll follow me long enough where I can grab my rifle and turn around or my shotgun and take a shot at it. And it was just the oddest thing. And, you know, another time hunting with my son when he was young, I was trying to get him involved in hunting, and we were at a farmer's property, and it was swampy. It was kind of you know, looking back on it now, it was kind of a creepy area because there were a lot of dead trees and there was some really old logging equipment back there that obviously wasn't working anymore and was just kind of rusted and left to just, it died out there and that's just where they left it, you know? So it was kind of like a logging equipment graveyard, you know, and muddy, and it was like, you know, it was obvious during the warmer months that was probably a swamp area. And, you know, my son was maybe 30-35 yards away from me, perfectly in view of me, everything was fine. And, you know, he was there for 20 minutes and he came over to me and he's like, I don't like it here, I want to leave. And I was like, well, you know, Jesus Christ, we just got here, you know? And, you know, I'm not thinking about Bigfoot at all. I'm a dad who's trying to get his kid interested in hunting. And of course, you know, all of a sudden my kid, he's bored and he wants to go home, you know, and we just got there. And, it wasn't until years later, he's having a conversation with me, telling me about this place that we were at and how really uncomfortable he was. He wasn't feeling good about being there. And that was the whole impetus of him coming and telling me he wanted to leave. I had no idea at that time that he was feeling sensory dread of being in that area.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm, as far as a Bigfoot experience, I'm kind of a frustrated one because I've never had a sighting. I've never had anything that I can concretely say that was Sasquatch. But through the years of delving into this and hearing other people's experiences and reading other reports and listening to other eyewitnesses, you can certainly start drawing a correlation to the things that I experienced and that he experienced. And, it's easy to draw a straight line between those things. If you believe in it, if you don't believe in it, I suppose you could draw a million other lines to other aspects. But
yeah,
it's just always been something that I don't have any problems believing in. You know,
well, it's quite fascinating, and you know, you seem to love adventure as much as I do,
and more so now. As I'm getting older, more so now, it wasn't something, I don't know, maybe it was, you know, you grow up, you get married, you have kids, you know, and all those things, kind of take the place of that thirst for adventure. But now that the kids are growing up and I don't have a significant other to worry about. You know, yeah, now, yeah. Now that sense of adventure is kicking back in. So,
you know, your story kind of brings back something that I remember now that happened going back 2003. I was with an ex-girlfriend and she was hunting and we were walking down a trail and I think she had a rifle with her and all of a sudden the bushes beside us started shaking and then crash to the forest like it was shaking,
yeah.
And then she took a gun and she's like, we jumped back, right? Because the bushes were above us. They were kind of above us because we were kind of there was a hillside on either side. It was almost like a small little gully. We're walking along a trail. And all of a sudden there's this just shaking of the tree and then suddenly crash. And we thought it was a bear, right? Because we were out there. I think she was hunting deer. And we knew that there was grizzlies in the area because we had seen the scat. But now looking back, now what I know about grizzlies or what I know about bears is it really makes me think about that day because we looked at each other and she was shocked because she said, huh, that was odd. You know, usually a bear would just run off and wouldn't shake the tree.
Yeah.
And then run off, like the bushes didn't, but it obviously shook because I heard it crack, like break one of the branches, like one of the thick branches. And that's what made us jump back. And we're looking up at the bush was shaking. And then it crash, you could hear it run through the forest. And I remember my girlfriend saying, well, that was odd. Why would the bear, I mean, obviously it was a bear, but why would it shake the bushes and then run off? And I'm like, well, I don't know. But we turned around and went back. We turned around and walked back to the way we had come. But this is back in 2003.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of reminds me now, like things that people have interviewed now and things that I've seen and whatnot, and it just, that incident kind of makes me think because now I know what, you know, I read more about grizzlies. I've been, I don't know how many times I've had bears walk out in front of me while I'm out there in the forest.
You know, coming from British Columbia, in Canada there, you know, there's two personalities that very much stand out to me as far as being kind of highlighted in this, three personalities highlighted in this phenomenon. One being Les Stroud, Survivor Man.
And, oh yeah, yeah.
You know, I've been a fan of his for years and years through the Survivor Man episodes, and then when he tackled the Bigfoot subject, you know, he shot right up to the top for me, because he strikes me as being a no bullshit kind of guy, and I like his approach to things. But then you also have another gentleman by the name of Steve Istall, who lives mm-hmm. in British Columbia, and his YouTube channel, howtohunt.com, with the being inundated with emails from people who have experiences. And I think his channel has done a great service to these people as far as being able to get their stories out. And you know, for those of us who are interested in this subject, giving us a lot more meat to wrap our teeth around as far as stories of these things. In your experience with living in that area, is it common to hear about this stuff? Is it, you know, I know people don't want to go on film a lot of times and they don't want to record a lot of times, but are there conversations about this type of stuff pretty regularly? I mean, that you've run into?
Well, every once in a while, someone will start talking about it, but it isn't something that someone just comes out and just starts talking about.
Yeah.
Right? They don't come back from a hike and say, "Oh, I saw Bigfoot." A lot of times you kind of have to ask them.
You know, like what's the difference between the new services, your televised news and versus here in the States? You know, if there's a Bigfoot sighting that actually makes the news, you know, it's usually tackled tongue in cheek, and you know, they got, you know, it's like, oh, the DNR says they saw a picture, you know, and it's obviously being poked fun at and stuff like that. Do you guys up there in Canada, is that pretty much the same?
Perception? Yeah, it is. I mean, mainstream media, yeah, they definitely don't take the subject very serious. And until we can actually, you know, be able to study one, you know, mainstream media will always mock it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
shame.
The way it is.
Yeah, it is. You know, from the standpoint of somebody who is, you know, film is your life. Capturing the right lighting, the right situation. That's how you make your money.
Yeah.
How would you suggest to somebody who was a weekend warrior going out looking to try to find evidence of these beings in whatever area they are? What would you suggest as far as, because I know like GoPros, my son had an early version of GoPro and it did a great job of filming and everything, but there was always some kind of clutter when you were trying to transfer the video off of that onto the software on your computer. Half the time it didn't work and there were always issues with it. I don't know if they've taken care of that and it's a much better product now. What would you suggest as far as somebody who was interested in going out and trying to document their investigations into this? What kind of equipment, you know, what can your normal, everyday Sasquatch enthusiast, what can they put in their pack to take with them that you think would be, of good enough quality?
Well, GoPro is amazing quality, you know, shooting 4K. But GoPro is also a major fail. Like GoPro is almost one of the worst cameras to film with. To actually, if you're going to make film, or if you're going to try, you know, do anything longer than 45 minutes, GoPro is definitely not the camera you want to take with you. I mean, you can go and buy, you know, 10 different batteries. And yes, you can hang a GoPro on the back of your, you know, your backpack facing behind you. But you better know that GoPro battery is going to die within, you know, 45 minutes if you're lucky. And what happens is you'll be hiking for another 2 hours thinking that the GoPro is recording. And then you'll find out you only got 45 minutes. GoPro is literally a camera that was only invented for doing short videos. The extreme stuff, you know, jumping into water, you know, quick surfing,
right,
skiing, you know, something fast. It's not made for doing film. It's great for like a D-roll, not even a B-roll. It's good for D-roll. I would say, you know, you could go out, you could buy yourself one of those. If you can get a 4K video camera, that would be great because you can crop in, you know, four times, right? So, and another thing about GoPro is such a wide angle. that even if Sasquatch was to walk in front of you, walk out in front of you, I mean, the Sasquatch is 25 feet from you, but on the GoPro, it looks like it's
quarter of a mile. Know,
two, yeah, yeah. Yeah. 300 feet. Right. So, but yeah, if you can buy just your phone is nowadays the new Samsung phone shoots 8K video. And it shoots pretty good. And you can program your cell phone to actually have a button where you can just push it and it turns on camera like right away, instantly.
Yeah.
And you can start recording. I mean, that's the best advice. And if you're trying to film with your cell phone sideways. Try not to film up and down.
So you have a wider view. Yeah,
you get the wider view. So whatever you're filming, the creature or bear or whatever, as it's walking, you can get the whole thing. You know, I understand why people film up and down is because, you know, when you film vertical, it's you can hold the cell phone and not worry about it falling out of your hands.
Right.
But you can get way better footage if you film with your camera sideways.
So speaking about better footage, you know, one of the big things and it plagues this topic till this day, and it's always used in memes and anyone who, you know, wants to poke fun at this subject are the blurry photographs. You know, well, it's a blob squatch. Oh, it's blurry. Oh, it's out of focus. Oh, you're moving. Oh, you know, is there any equipment on the market that, you know, average Joe can afford that would help nominalize the you know, the stability issues? Is there something that, you know, like is a handheld device that you can put your camera into that is going to give you much?
Well, there is, but it isn't like you can just walk around with it. I mean, you can buy a gimbal or a stabilization equipment, but it isn't like you can just trip. It isn't like you can just walk through the forest with it, right? Because if you turn it too fast, the gimbal will actually turn and it'll all screw up. I mean, my best advice is get yourself a monopod. Monopod, like one of those. It's like a tripod, but it's like a stick.
Right. Yeah. I have one.
And that's the one thing, you know, you can walk with it. If you get a good enough one that's sturdy enough, you can use it as a walking stick.
Yeah.
Right. And in case something does come out, you have that where you can hold it and you have the camera already on it. Right. And that's probably the best thing that you can use at the moment. I mean, it's a hard one. You can lean up against a tree. That's another one. If something comes out, you can actually quickly lean the camera against the tree, your cell phone, and that will stabilize your cell phone, right? Instead of just holding it in your hand.
Right.
Right. So that's probably my best advice. I mean, it's a hard one out there, right? I mean, right now, for all we know, Sasquatch truly is a blur. That's what he is.
Yeah.
We should really call him just a blur squatch for sure. That's why we can never get a sharp picture.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, you know, and I guess, you know, everybody always keeps going back to the Patterson-Gimlin film, and with the advances in technology and the new software that's available, they're constantly going back to that film and stabilizing it and enhancing it. Excuse me. And, you know, the most recent one, I believe was, just a couple of months ago, aired on a show called The Proof Is Out There. Dr. Meldrum was in on it, and two other gentlemen, and the one gentleman there was the one that was pretty much the caretaker of taking I think 23 or 27 different versions of that film that have been found online and had been provided to them. And they were all run through a software. And I believe there was some form of AI was used in it, where they were able to actually get the best copy of a stabilized image of Patterson Gimlin film with Patty walking across that sandbar. And, nice. And now with as cleaned up as it is, you can actually see the flexation of the front toes. When she goes to take a step, you can see the toes lift up before she puts her foot back down in that next step. And consequently, you can also now see there's been years of people saying that there looked like a seam that was running down the back of her backside, like that was where the zipper was for this suit. Now you can actually see that it's the split of her glutes. That's her butt crack that is
oh, yeah. There.
And you can see wear marks in her fur where her arm, her hand rubs up against the side of her thigh every time she takes a step and moves her arms forward and back. You can see the change of the direction in the hair on her thigh.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, you know, 50 years later, so I guess the point that I'm making is, even though that film in its original state was jumbled up and a guy was jumping off of his horse and falling over logs until he finally got set and got a couple of seconds of fairly stable footage, 50 years later, with the advancement of technology, that has become a very important piece of film. I think it's been said that is the only other film in existence that's been studied as much is the Zapruder film of JFK's assassination.
Yeah.
And they still can't prove that it's fake.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Sasquatch was the one that shot him.
from the grassy knoll or from the wooded knoll?
The wooded knoll for sure. Definitely.
Well, Jason, I tell you what, I really appreciate you being with us today. It was great hearing your stories, and thank you again for the little props of throwing me into your documentary. It was that was a thrilling moment for this 56-year-old guy who seeing himself on a pay-per-view documentary. Again, I absolutely enjoyed talking with you. Good luck to you and your endeavors. We were talking about some things before we started recording. If you're interested, I'll keep you in the loop of what's going on with all of that.
And, yeah, that would be great.
One more time for the listeners, if you would, just let them know how they can get a hold of you, how they can follow you, where they can view your videos.
So for people who want to see my animal adventures, behind the scenes of my exotic animal photo shoots, where you get to meet the most amazing people that live with the most amazing animals, you know, from tigers and bears and alligators and kangaroos and ostriches and wolves, bobcats, mice, giant spiders, huge snakes. And I have a motto. If I'm going to interview you and photograph your exotic animal, there can't be any cages. I have to be able to hug the animal. So you get really into a very personable reflection when you watch my videos. And, you know, I try and put humor into my animal adventures. And you can find that on my YouTube channel under A Photo Warrior. And you can find, like I said, if you just Google Jason Kenzie Animal Adventures, you will be able to find, there's over 300 of my animal adventures on YouTube. And if you want to find Searching for Sasquatch, I have www.searchingforsasquatch.ca. You can also just Google that too. Vimeo, and you can watch the newest chapter 3, part 1, and part two comes out next weekend. And yeah, I also designed some logos, some t-shirts that have I want to believe and I believe. And I'm going to be doing another children's book, and it's going to have the Sea Squatchers. It's going to be Adventures of Little JJ. Little JJ meets the Sea Squatchers.
No kidding.
Yes.
That's and, awesome.
We go and we have to find a certain, we have to go find a certain flower that will save the Sasquatches because they've lost all their powers of visibility, their smell, because, you know, they smell really bad. So if they lose that ability, how are we supposed to go, what stinks? Speed, strength, and all that. So that I'm working on right now. So that's going to be coming out
how fun. In a few months. And I have to interrupt you just real quick because, I have so many synchronicities with this show. I talk about weird stuff, you know, they're flat out. There's just never any really normal topics on this show. And, consequently, there's a lot of synchronicities. I don't even call them coincidences anymore because it's beyond coincidence. Jen Cruz, the head of the She Squatchers.
Yeah, I love her so much.
She is the one that messaged me last night to let me know that she saw me in your documentary.
Nice.
And consequently, at the time of this recording, Wednesday night coming up, I'm going to be a guest on their show of the Journey Radio, talking about Sasquatch. So it's so funny how things just all kind of flow together. You know, I mean, there's just always this thread that runs from one show to the next. It's kind of bizarre. It really is. And I've actually stopped trying to figure it out. Because
just let it happen.
I think it's just the universe's way of letting me know that I'm on the right track and I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing and I'm talking to the people that need to be talked to. And it's so strange how everything ties together.
I have to say, since searching for Sasquatch, since doing my films, my documentaries, and looking into the subject of cryptids, I have to say one of the best things that has happened since doing my documentaries are the friendships that I've made.
Isn't that the truth? You know,
that is probably the best since doing this. Yes, doing the adventures, being surrounded by whatever it is in the forest and meeting these people that have these experiences. But I'm telling you, the friendships, you know, with Robert Kreider and David and Adam Davies and the She Squatchers and, you know, with everyone, with you, all these people that I'm going to have probably for the rest of my life, really, because.
Isn't that the truth, you know, though? I mean, that. And I've said this to my kids, you know, as much as I love talking about all this weird stuff and as much as I believe in so much of this weird stuff, and it's kind of a dream come true for me to be able to be in a position where I get to talk to people about the weird stuff that they experience. The biggest takeaway for me is the relationships that I've built. Mm-hmm. Not only do I have relationships with people who message me who are listeners, that I have, you know, all over the country, some even from the UK, who message me on a fairly regular basis, you know, congratulating me on a great show, or they really like this person, or, to relationships that have, it's the strangest thing. It really is. And I don't know how to, I don't know how to say it any other way other than the best part of this show, me doing this show, has been the relationships that I've created and fostered since I started doing it, you know. And
well, I can't wait for those two people to write to you and say, hey, I like that show with Jason.
I'm sure they will.
Those are going to be some great two people. I can't wait. It's going to be great.
They might even be three.
Oh, would you imagine that? Maybe three and a half if one is a little person.
Oh.
this would be great. This would be great. I do have to say, I am surprised with all the film awards that I've gotten for Chapter One.
Yeah,
I would never have thought that I would.
And I'm going to put that in my social media when I promote this show. Man, you loaded up.
Oh, and I'm up for, there's three more. I'm at three or four more awards, which I'm, what do you call it when they accept you? There's a name for it. I can't remember. When you're up for the award and then they judge to see if it's going to be a winner. So one in Britain, I'm up for, there's a film festival in Britain and my film, Chapter Three and Chapter Two are in it.
So, and they've accepted it. So you're a nominee?
I'm a nominee. That's the word. Slipped my mind. But yeah, I'm just shocked. There's one in Australia. There's a big film festival in Australia, and I'm a nominee for that. And I'm just seeing if maybe they're going to pick it. Yeah, I think I've won six or seven awards for Chapter One, and I'm hoping that Chapter Two and Chapter Three, they get a few awards. But yeah, I was just blown away. Couldn't believe it.
Well, you're definitely doing the right thing. I mean, if you're getting that kind of interest, you're doing something right. That's for sure.
And, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's great. So many of these documentaries are serious. And I think there's a place for that. I think there's been too much fun poked at this subject for too long. So I think it's necessary to have a very sanitized and serious look at the subject. But you do your documentaries a little bit differently. Yours seems more like you're filming yourself going through this experience of trying to find it. So it's, even though it's about that topic, it's more about you
searching for Sasquatch. Yes.
And in that instance, you can add some levity and you can add some of your humor into it, and it doesn't take away from somebody who looks at this as a serious subject. You don't view your documentary and go, "Oh, that guy was just making fun of this shit." It's another one of those people that's just, you know, jumping on the bandwagon and taking advantage of something that we all think is serious, because that's not at all.
I'm making fun of myself.
Yeah, exactly. And I was impressed with Chapter Three. When we get done here today, Jen Cruz forwarded me the link from Chapter Two. I'm gonna get done here and I'm gonna pop that on, and then I'll search and find Chapter One as well, and look forward to Chapter Four next Sunday.
Well, in Chapter One, I found hundreds of hundreds of these huge footprints in this mountain lake in the middle of the forest. And the First Nation people who I showed this to, they truly believe that I had found the pathway of the Sasquatch. And I droned it. I put a drone up.
Oh,
really? And I droned the lake, and you could see all the footprints, hundreds of them going right across. And I interviewed eyewitnesses that were up there in this, it was a resort in the middle of the mountains. Like, you have to take an off-road vehicle to it. Then the lake I hike up to was like a 2-hour hike up to the top. And it was beautiful. And I wanted to show the beauty of the landscape. the beautiful world that we live in. That's why I did a lot of scenery. And chapter two, now that's a tricky one, chapter two, because so when I do poke fun or and I'm joking, one of the biggest reasons why I'm joking, and it sometimes it might seem like I'm making fun of Sasquatch, but what's happening is I get scared.
Exactly.
And the only way it calms myself down is by joking.
I knew that's where you were going to go.
Yeah, and that's why, and it's just an automatic reaction. Like, I'm like, okay, so maybe that's a bear. Please don't eat me. I taste terrible. Like, you know, like I'm just trying to calm myself down as I'm alone in the forest. So chapter two, at the end of the video, at the end of the documentary, I have a FLIR that's connected to my phone, and I could hear crunching in the snow. It was all in the snow. I camped out in the snow. I dug out a little trench so I could sleep in this little cave, this little snow cave, and I could hear crunching in the forest, and I couldn't see anything, but on the FLIR, I could see something running back and forth multiple times, running like it was. So my FLIR was shooting about 400 feet into the forest, and I could hear moving. I could hear crunching, and on the FLIR, I could see something. Like, it was all yellow. Everything was yellow, and I'm like, "Well, what? This is weird. Why is it just all yellow?" And you could see very slight, like a red indent. Like a red, and I guess it was the camera was so close to whatever it was that it was basically like right up against whatever it was, and it was moving back and forth. And at one point, it went that one way, and then it's like it realized, oh, I don't want to go that way, and darted back. And I couldn't see it with my own eyes, but I could like see. It was really strange. It was closer to the end, and then I took an apple. And I offered it to whatever it was. And here I'm thinking that there's nothing. That's my imagination. And then what I did, well, was comedic, what I did next. And now, after being in Michigan with the Bigfoot researchers and everything that happened in the forest with the eye shine and how they were literally next to me and I couldn't see it at the moment, it really makes me wonder that what I did at the end of chapter two could have really have pissed them off if Sasquatches were real and that's what they were in the forest. And it makes me wonder, I'm like, oh God, I was being really cheeky, you know? And I'm like, wow, if these Sasquatches are truly real animals and they were really there, you know, I'm like, oh God, I really could have really pissed them off. But anyway, besides that, you know, in fun watching chapter two and chapter one, and you know, it was a pleasure talking to you, and I hope I get to see you next year or this year.
It's been a pleasure with you as well, and I hope that we can make something happen where we're in the same place at the same time, because you know, we had a really nice conversation, as brief as it was, back in July, but I think we have a lot more to talk about, and you know, just like what we were saying about fostering these relationships with people that we meet through this subject, it's you just meet a lot of really good people. I want to double back here real quick, like with this last experience that you were telling me about the image on the FLIR, not being able to see it in person, but yet seeing but hearing it and seeing it, you know, that kind of goes into something that we really didn't touch on, and that is the woo aspects of what people say about these beings and their purported abilities to maybe be somewhat in the spiritual or supernatural realm as well. What are your thoughts on that? Because the woo for me is a very fascinating subject, and it makes a subject that I really like that much more interesting. But on the same hand, it makes it that much more unbelievable, because it's just simply something that doesn't seem like it should be able to exist. I'll tell you something
that happened that I didn't touch on in chapter two. Right before all that happened, I heard what sounded like children playing in the forest, and it blew me away. And it really scared my camera person. They were like, we could hear what sounded like children, and we're in the middle of nowhere. Like, literally it's 1 or 2 in the morning. And for a split second, we heard children playing, and then nothing. And I didn't get it on audio. In fact, I didn't even have the audio going at that moment, and it only lasted for a few seconds. And then everything kind of, you could hear the crunching and the, I heard a scream in the forest earlier that night, responding back. But about the woo, it's an interesting subject. And I think I did touch on the woo a little bit in chapter two.
Do you think it discredits all the hard work that's being made to try to prove the existence of these things?
Only if everybody decided to focus on that.
Yeah.
Like, if everyone stopped doing what they were doing and decided, well, we're just going to like all lean into the woo factor, then yes, it could. But because there's a group of people who are, you know, focusing on the woo factor, it doesn't really take away from other people who are doing the scientific, looking for physical evidence. Yeah. I mean, it's okay to touch on the woo factor, you know, to go into it, because right now, because Sasquatch has never been actually physically touched, and like, meaning like no one's really, that everything goes.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Everything goes.
You can't really dismiss anything.
No, you can't. You should like at least dabble in a little bit of everything. But if you just 100% focus on one thing, then you could lose yourself.
Because, you know, so many people talk about, on the woo camp of it, talk about their ability to cloak.
Yeah.
And, you know, but you look at, I don't know the exact species, but octopus or cephalopod, or, you know, yeah, it can change its skin tone to match what it's sitting on. Immediately, I mean, quicker than you can turn a TV channel, it can change its appearance, you know, and that's something that we find in our natural world.
Yeah. You know, well, you know, even deer, they've been known to turn their body in a certain way where they disappear in the forest, like in the bushes.
Well,
for a split second,
having spent time as a hunter, you know, sitting out watching a field waiting for deer to come out, and then all of a sudden, holy shit, there's a deer 30 yards away from you.
Exactly. And you were looking in that direction the whole time.
You never saw it.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
And they're not in a camouflage. They're tan and white, and but nature has a way of providing a protection for species that are out there so that they're not readily seen. So to me, that doesn't seem like it doesn't seem like much of a stretch of an imagination at all to think that it's possible.
Yeah, you just don't know. I mean, these creatures, I'm telling you, in chapter three, Blake and I, we were within 5-6 feet from the eye shine. Like, Blake was literally looking at it. I mean, he was focused on the tree break.
Yeah.
Like, he was focused on that.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to ask you about that. Was, you know, like, when you say it was right in front of you and you couldn't see it, is it because it was so god-awful dark that you wouldn't have been able to see anything? Or are you saying that potentially it was in front of you, but you couldn't see it because it was cloaking?
Well, no, it was dark, for one thing. And yeah, it was probably behind a tree. For the longest time, when I was looking through the footage and I saw the it was always one eye. Always one eye. Most of the time it was one eye, except for the two sets of eye shine at the very end of the path. But other than that, it was always one eye. And I got thinking, well, maybe it has a damaged eye. And because I at the beginning, I thought maybe it was just hiding behind a tree and you only see one eye because it's, but yeah, it was dark. We weren't focused on looking in the forest.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you see the footage, you'll be like, wow, that is close. And it's higher than us. So whatever it was quite tall. It was at least 7 or 8 feet, a little higher than us. And, you know, I've had a couple of people that did see it, and they said, well, it's a bug. I'm like, well, and because it's moving. I said, well, it looks like it's moving because my camera is moving. I have my camera on my hand, and I'm moving the camera, and I'm moving. My body's moving. And so because you have that parallax, it's called parallax, and it's a term that in the film industry we call it, that the camera moves, but the subject behind you stays still. But because you're moving and because there's that depth of field, that it looks like it's moving. And that's why it looks like it's moving every time that we see the eye shine, because I'm moving. If I had it on a tripod, the subject wasn't moving.
I'm going to call back to something that you touched on earlier, and it was when you were talking about you know, blocking somebody out in a video by putting a light behind them so that they're not recognized. And then people being smart enough to know that you can change the exposure in that film to actually see who it is. The footage that you have of that eye shine, are you capable of manipulating that film and changing exposures to possibly brighten to see what was there?
I did try and brighten it a little bit to see if maybe I could see. I couldn't see anything. I mean, maybe someone out there could just take the footage and they can just, maybe they have a more advanced computer system that can actually, you know, lighten it more. Maybe you can see a shape or something. You know, when you watch the footage, you'll understand what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, I'm not saying it's a Sasquatch or Sasquatches, because I, you know, but who knows? I mean, there is something out there. There is something, some things out there that is unexplained. Even I can't explain it. But until, you know, one walks up to me and slaps me in the face, you know, in broad daylight, you
know. Maybe hope for a handshake instead of a slap in the face.
Yeah, exactly. It comes up. I'm like, if that happens, I'm going to be like, high five. I'm like, hey, dude, you're too high. I can't reach up 12 feet. That's too high of a high five. Low five? Low five.
Well, Jason, it's been a pleasure. And thank you for taking time out of your morning to do this with me. I appreciate the time and change and you accommodating me. So, please stay in touch.
Thank you. My pleasure. I will.
Stay in touch, and hopefully our listeners are going to head over and check out your wealth of video experiences.
Yeah, and, I hope so. And, you know, leave some comments. Let me know what you think. I don't care if they're bad or good comments. All comments are your opinions. And, you know, all I ask is you just keep on smiling. We're all trying to find out if these subjects are real.
And if nothing else, it gets you out into nature.
Gets us into the forest, into nature, hiking, camping, you know, waterfalls. Yeah, exactly. Well, Eric, you have the best of the day.
You too, sir.
And until next time, keep the adventures continuing.
All right, my friend.
All right. Bye-bye.
I want to hear your story. I want to hear your experience. So email me at contact.uncomfortable@gmail.com. If you enjoy the show, then leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. Share the show with your friends. Share the show on social media. Make sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter, all at Uncomfortable Podcast. And until next week, my friends, stay uncomfortable.